This is NPR Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey. Even at this time of economic anxiety, America's system of organized labor is so convoluted, it's no wonder unions are so unpopular. That's one of the arguments posited by veteran Chicago union lawyer Thomas Gagin in his latest book, Only One Thing Can Save Us, Why America Needs a New Kind of Labor Movement. Gagin has been practicing union side law since 1973, but he decided to take a break from that to run for Congress in 2009 and the special election to fill the vacancy when Rahm Emanuel went to work in the Obama White House. Gagin finished 7th out of 14.
A friend of mine told me, you have no chance, but you'll never regret doing it. And I think that turned out to be right. I had no chance. I'll never regret doing it. I will never do it again.
I spoke with Gagin last December in his Chicago office.
Reading your book, you talk a little bit about running for that office and kind of tie that into where Democrats are on labor right now. And you have a critique of the way Democrats have treated the labor movement and how the labor movement has responded to Democrats, right? You said that was an opportunity. They could have put a union lawyer in. They could have put a union member in if they wanted to in that special election.
If they had unified behind a single candidate, and I was the union side labor lawyer, and I got no endorsements from anyone except the nurses, even though I had all sorts of friends of the AFL-CIO in Washington who sent missives out here to the Chicago Federation of Labor saying, oh, you should get behind so-and-so. It didn't happen. So, you know, and I understand why, but it is also true that labor will give its support for just about any Democrat who doesn't openly oppose it. And they have sold out cheap over the years. And I find it one of the reasons that I think labor has so little clout in D.C.
Well, and that's just it. You say, well, they're not, or you quote them saying, they're not going to be against us, right? And that's kind of the prevailing ethos.
That's what the Chicago Federation of Labor later said to me. So, you know, why should we care? Well, you should care because I think you need a voice in Washington, and I think that you need to be thinking creatively outside the box within the Democratic Party and making the case why labor is the only way to deal with the issues that the Democratic Party needs to deal with, which is managing the economy so that people don't go into serious debt and we have meltdowns like we did before, managing the trade deficit so that we don't have this continuing flood of jobs out of the country. And I'm not saying this because I'm necessarily in favor of tariffs or knocking down TPP, I think it's more a question of planning an economy that pushes investment out of the financial sector and into manufacturing, to put it bluntly. And we don't have a Democratic Party, and we don't have even an organized labor movement with some gloriously intelligent exceptions who gets that point. That's one of the reasons I ran.
So
I wrote this book instead, which sort of laid out what I would have said had I been elected to the U.S. House, and probably would have gotten more attention if I had been in Congress, and I could have gotten then on Chris Hayes and, you know, opined about this more.
If you were in Congress,
or now on television. Not that I have anything against public radio.
Thank you. What you do hear from Democrats, though, is education is the key, right? Education is the answer. We have to improve education. Why is that message, in your opinion, flawed?
Well, it's flawed because we've been trying education, and it's not a panacea. You know, the inequality between college and high school grads hasn't increased. It's increased within the college grad population. The top 1% and so forth. And we have, aside from that, we have too many college grads for college-level jobs. We have 30% of recent graduates in non-college jobs. Now, let me tell you what a non-college job is, because it's often not described. You think it might be something like working at Goldman Sachs. Well, that's not what a college job is. Being a policeman is a college job. Being a nurse is a college job. Being a claims adjuster might be a college job, according to the U.S. Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics. So when we're talking about non-college jobs, we're talking about college graduates who can't get in as nurses, can't get in as police officers, can't get in as claims adjusters. What are they doing? I don't know. Selling ties at Macy's, a lot of them. Some might be driving cabs. And the percentage of non-college graduates drops as you age, not surprisingly, because people retire and jobs free up, and there's a certain, but the wait to get into a college job, or the wait for people who are in college jobs, and let's forget about the 30% in non-college jobs, the people in college jobs aren't making any money. And as we age, and I'm a baby boomer, if you look at the percentage of people in this country and in this state of Illinois who are ages 65 to 75, that percentage of workers is going way up. It was 18% in 1992. In 2020, it's going to be 32% and probably grow from there. So you've got one policy where we're saying, oh, yeah, well, you don't have a pension, you don't have Social Security that is decent enough, but you can keep working. That's what we're telling older people. And we're telling younger people, yeah, 30% are non-college jobs, but you've got to go to college, and we want to jam more people into college, and it doesn't matter if you take on debt. One of those public policies isn't talking to the other public policy, and we're creating this kind of glut of workers. I always get upset when people say, oh, jobs are disappearing. BS. You know, what is happening is we've just got more people working. You know, compared to 20 or 30 years ago, or 50 years ago, there are more women in the workplace. There are far more older workers in the workplace. And we have more people, vastly more college graduates in the workforce, male, female, old, young, than we've ever had before. And we keep jamming them in. And at the same time, it's true, we have investment policies in this country which have pushed money into finance and out of manufacturing and out of Main Street sort of things that used to provide better income. So the upshot is college is not the answer. And pushing more people into college is not the answer. And I also am aghast that a Democratic Party, which is supposed to represent working people, is telling a country where 70% of the adult population didn't get a college BA, telling that 70%, it's too late for you, you're screwed, you didn't go to college, too bad, because college is the only way of dealing with inequality or anything else. First of all, it's not true. And second of all, it tells people to despair. You wonder why people don't show up and vote in elections. It's because they're turned off by the Democratic Party message and they're migrating over to Donald Trump.
Coming up, why America's labor laws make it hard for politicians to loudly support unions, why unions have such a hard time organizing in America, and what unions can do to harness the significant number of Americans who want their protection but can't figure out how to get it. That's ahead. It's NPR Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey. Today we're hearing from veteran labor lawyer Thomas Gagin. I spoke with him in his Chicago office last December. His latest book is Only One Thing Can Save Us, Why America Needs a New Kind of Labor Movement. When we left off, Gagin was saying Democrats are making a mistake when they tell working people that more education would solve their problems.
Why do Democrats take that line then, in your opinion? I mean, you think that they ought to be promoting some sort of labor movement, right? This is the one thing that can save us.
Because it's safe. You know, it's very volatile to come forward now and talk about unions to a country that is 95% is locked out. So the same remark that I just made about turning off your base when you tell them to go to college could be said about telling people to join unions when it's impossible to get into them. And it's very hard under the U.S. system of exclusive representation, compulsory dues. To get that in place for a union has to go through all sorts of hoops, certified elections, NLRB, fights with employers, something that doesn't happen in other parts of the world because they don't use exclusive representation as the way of representing working people. So you have this bizarre system in the United States where let's say Germany, Sweden, Austria, France. If you want to be in a union, no problem. You just go over there and say, look, I want to be in a union. And you sign up and you're in. In the United States, you can't join a union unless the union is certified as the exclusive representative of 50% plus one of a particular bargaining unit, which is determined by a bunch of lawyers in Washington, D.C. after lots of cogitation and back and forth and expense. It's bizarre.
Is labor making a mistake in, I mean, obviously you say that under the current system of exclusive representation, you can't also kill the agency shop, or you make the case that if you're going to kill the agency shop, you have to also kill exclusive representation.
Yeah, of course.
And so,
because there's no money to pay for exclusive representation, it's like being I've been analogizing it lately to a common carrier or public utility. What happens with a common carrier or public utility, whether it's a railroad or Verizon Communications as a common carrier or a public utility like Commonwealth Edison? They serve a limited defined public, and they have to serve everybody in that public, all comers, and they serve it at a rate that is fixed by the government. Well, they have a constitutional right to a reasonable rate for their services. Now, in the labor sector, you have labor being kind of like a common carrier or a public utility. They have a government obligation to serve all customers within a defined public, but they aren't allowed to charge. You know, I mean, on the one hand, you've got to serve the public just like a utility or common carrier, but unlike a utility or common carrier, some customers get this for free. You know, it makes no sense. I mean, legally, this thing, right to work, is a travesty because it requires a union to do something for nothing. Now, the logical answer to this is, why have exclusive representation? But nobody wants to raise that. Employers don't want to raise it because they know that, you know, it will lead to chaos, actually. You know, anybody could then join a union, right? You know, and you could come in and you might have bargaining rules for just 30% of the people instead of 50 plus one, or 20%. At least you have to meet with them. Nobody wants that system on the employer side. So they simultaneously want right to work gone, but they want exclusive representation come in. And on the labor side, why wouldn't labor want to junk this and say, why don't we just organize the way they do in Germany and Italy and blah, 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 and say that you've got a legal duty to bargain with us if we come in with 20%, at least meet with us, see what we have to say. But the unions really liked the whole idea that they would get compulsory dues. It makes planning easier. You can hire a bureaucracy. You can have lawyers like me on board. The problem with it is it's easier to operate. It's wonderful to operate. It's guaranteed money. You don't have to get off your duff and do anything for the members unless you really screw up. The money's just going to come in. But it means that over time, the employers realized that and were able to develop all sorts of devices that make it very, 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 very hard to certify a union. And we live in a country that is hyper-individualistic, and you've got to convince a certain number of people that they should stick their necks out for a union and vote for it when they just want to be left alone, even though they like union benefits. You know, I quoted one German union leader in the book saying, the United States system is so screwy. He said, if we had to have a majority of Germans vote for unions the way they do in the United States, we'd have no unions in Germany. And yet Germany has the most powerful labor movement in the world. And it's all right to work in that sense. Nobody has to pay any dues in Germany. But it's so much easier to pull people in from every single country and to create a kind of collective mass that does require the employers of the country to sit down and bargain, sometimes nationwide, about what the wage rates are going to be, that it's a very powerful system. And everyone has said, oh, well, the United States is different. The United States is different. Yes, the United States is different, but less so. Let's face it, there are lots and lots of foreign national companies that are now in here. And they're not as hostile as some of the natives are, our own employers. And some of that hostility comes from the fact that unions are so rare an event that an employer regards it as an insult if he has to deal with a union. I mean, why me? You know, it's like being struck by lightning. There are no unions anywhere else. So we've got to develop a system that just opens up the whole process and lets everybody who wants to be in a union sign up and be part of the labor movement. And that's not, in this country, 6% of the private sector. And that 6% probably includes a huge number who don't really want to be in unions anyway. That is probably more like 30% of the workforce in this country. A minority, to be sure, but a minority that is precisely because it's more militant would make the American labor movement, which would be representing these people, more militant than they are representing the 6% now, who, some of whom include people who would just as soon not make any kind of waves at all. That's what labor has to do. It's got to figure out how to harness and get behind and be a voice for the people in this country who really say, I've had it, I'm willing to take on the boss, I want to be a union member. And we have a system right now that shuts those people out and pulls in instead people who don't necessarily want to be in there at all. It makes no sense.
Thomas Gagin's book, Only One Thing Can Save Us, Why America Needs a New Kind of Labor Movement, is out in paperback. I'm Brian Mackey.